Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Ollie sent us an email to that address and he's not happy. In fact, his blood is just boiling at this stage. Why? Well, it's about those disposable vapes you see all these people with. Ollie says, I'm living in Mullingar and there are so many of these just dumped on the side of the roads and footpaths. At our local lake, I picked up over 10 of these one Monday morning, and last weekend I was in Sligo surfing, vapes on the beach. I went for a walk along Eastquay and right down on the rocks in a pool of water, 5 of these disposable vapes. They're just everywhere you look. It's just a disgrace. What sort of animal cannot bloody put rubbish in a bin? And also, because there are batteries in the vapes, I would imagine these should be put into the Wee battery recycling. That's waste electrical and electronic equipment. Wee, with 3 E's. It's one thing we don't know the harm these are causing to people's health, but if the effers who are using them would just dispose of them correctly, it would be something. The government needs to ban these once and for all, or put a €10 disposable charge on each vape. They're littering all over the country. In the UK, there are over 5 million of these vapes dumped each week. We need action on this. It's getting out of hand. Ollie Green. You're not the first to give out about disposable vapes. And it was notable that Electric Picnic banned them this year because of what you outline here. And I see that the UK have plans to ban them. And you're right, we don't know what long-term harm they're causing to people. But you can see firsthand, Ollie, that they're unsightly, littering our beautiful countryside. I don't know what the answer is. Is an outright ban the answer? And in through the nose and out through the mouth, Ollie. Because, you know, it is, I know it's a bother and it's annoying and it's frustrating, but don't get too head up over these things. There isn't much you can do about it. So in through the nose, out through your mouth. Here's something you can do something about. The number of times you wash your towel. How often do you wash your towel? Well, they did a survey in the UK. They liked their servers in the UK. And they found that 3% wash their bath towels once a blank. Once a year. Once a year. Yeah, I kid you not. And if you extrapolate that out from the population of the UK, that's 1.5 million people who are happy to dry themselves on the same stinky towel every day for a year. Oh, sorry. Yes, no, for the first week, it'll be fine. Probably wouldn't be for me, but for somebody, it would be fine for the first week. And the second week, then, it's getting a bit grimy. Week 3, week 4, month 2, so month 12. They recommend, these are the experts, they who sit in a room and decide these things, that you should wash your bath towel every 2 or 3 uses. The gaff goddess herself, Lord Barra, is coming on after 4 o'clock and she'll give us the lowdown on the rubdown. She'll be giving us the lowdown on what you should do with your bath towels, how often you should wash them, how you should treat them, tea towels, dishcloths, the whole thing. If you're not quiet, I'll give you a smack in the kisser with a dirty dishcloth. That was a threat my granny used to use. It was a good one because you don't want a smelly dishcloth in your face. How often should you wash those? How often do you wash your? How often should you wash your jeans? And if you don't wash them and you're fine, what harm? You know what I mean? You're not bothering anybody. We're off to the ploughing this day of week. It's back in Rathaniska, County Laois. The National Ploughing Championships. The biggest outdoor event in Europe. You'll be hearing a lot of that. I'm looking forward to the Mocra World Record Breaking Welly Throwing Event. I'm not saying I'm good at it, but I've participated in a welly throwing event before. And I don't know. I don't know if I won or not. I think it was just a photo opportunity. But it's good crack throwing a welly around the place. And they're doing that. And I'm sure I'll be doing it. We're down there next Tuesday at Rathaniska in the Roadcaster. And if you are going to be there, be it a visitor or a stall holder, do let us know if you want, you know, if you have something to, if you're peddling something. And you want some national airtime and you have a good enough story to tell, we might be interested in you. ray@rte.ie, get in touch with us. And we're there next Tuesday. Ian Wilmut, there's a name, famous scientific name, Professor Ian Wilmut. He was one of the team that cloned Dolly the sheep back in 1996. He died yesterday at the age of 79. He worked with his team at the University of Edinburgh's Roslin Institute for Animal Biosciences. Initially referred to as 6LL3 in the academic paper describing the work, the lamb was later named Dolly after the singer Dolly Parton. I don't know how she felt about that, if she was ever asked. The lamb's cloning was the first time scientists were able to coax a mature adult cell into behaving like a cell from a newly fertilised embryo in order to create a genetically identical animal. It's sci-fi stuff. It's 27 years ago. 27 years ago. And of course, when it happened, the naysayers thought the sky was going to fall in. It was heralded as a revolution by some scientists. It unnerved many, with critics calling such experiments unethical. The year after Dolly's creation, US President Bill Clinton imposed a ban on the use of federal funds for human cloning, but stopped short of banning all cloning research. And Dolly, the sheep's creation, prompted other scientists to clone animals, including dogs, cats, horses and bulls. And it also spurred questions about the potential cloning of humans and extinct species. It may have been done, we don't know, in some lab somewhere, but it hasn't gone public. And in recent years, scientists have proposed bringing back the woolly mammoth. And we spoke to Ben Lamb, no relation to Dolly, CEO of, that was terrible, CEO of Colossal Biosciences. And they are trying to bring back the woolly mammoth. And they were in the news earlier this year because they're proposing to bring back the dodo as well. So what they do is they have a little bit of DNA from a fossil, and then they grow that in a petri dish, and before you know it, you have a dodo or a woolly mammoth. Not quite that straightforward, but using the same science that they used to clone Dolly the sheep. So anyway, rest in peace, Professor Ian Wilmut. He was a trailblazer when it came to scientific research and cloning. At the cutting edge of technology, the new iPhone launched today. And techies will already know this, but today is a big day for Apple as they kick off their Wanderlust event. Wanderlust event. What's that, you ask? And so did I. It's the annual September event that Apple put on. It generally introduces the new generation of iPhones as well as other Apple products, and it gets a lot of attention and it gets people talking on the radio, which I suppose is free advertising time. It probably is, yes. I do apologise for that. It started back in 2007 with Steve Jobs in his polo neck. And today, it'll see the launch of the iPhone 15, the iPhone 15 Plus, iPhone 15 Pro, iPhone 15 Pro Max. It's going to be lighter. It has a periscope camera. Oh, wow. One of those things that can look around corners. No, I don't think so. They just call it a periscope camera for some reason. It's offering six, multiplied by six, optical zoom capabilities. So you can zoom in and zoom out to the sixth degree or something like that. One of the biggest differences of the new range of iPhones is the inclusion of USB Type-C. Oh, this is going to annoy people now. This is going to annoy people. So do you remember back in, oh, I don't know, 2005, the EU said, oh, there's going to be a universal charging cable. Everyone will have to have the same. And all the big tech companies says, ha, 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 ha. Are you joking? We're bigger than you. We won't be doing that. And they didn't. And recently again, they said they were going to introduce legislation to make sure that all the tech companies use the same connectors. And it seems to be they're all going towards the USB Type-C, which will make a lot of the stuff that you have in the drawer. You know those cables you have in your drawer, which I definitely have something for that. Has anybody got a connector for that Bluetooth speaker? I think I'll have one somewhere. And then you go through about 15 and finally you find one. They're talking about a time in the future where there will be one and it will fit everything. Oh, some utopian world where we won't have that big drawer full of cables because one cable will fit all. Ah, I should hear angels singing now after saying that. Anyway, so it's USB Type-C to USB Type-C, which is sort of good because that lightning thing that was uniquely Apple is gone. So a lot of people will be saying thank you very much for that. So you can pay $799 up to $1,300 for the various editions of that there. David O'Doherty, very funny man. He's a comedian. That, and he's funny. That sort of helps those two come together. But he posted a picture on his social media of him in front of the Hall of Fame in Leo Burdock's in Dublin. And there's a list. I'm looking at it there. You two, Sandra Bullock, Ben Kingsley, Larry Mullins. Well, he is you two. Naomi Campbell, Eddie Jordan. They're all there. I see Johnny Sexton's name is there as well. These are all people who have got the famous fish and chips from Leo Burdock's. Ian Dempsey's there, Eamon Dunphy's there, Paolo Tullio, the late Paolo Tullio, Ken Doherty, Boyzone, Johnny Knoxville, wow, Brian O'Driscoll, Aslan, the late Christy, Jerry Ryan, the late Jerry Ryan. You'd want to be in there, wouldn't you? Yeah, and I'm there, Enya, I'm just below Enya and Marty Whelan. But the thing that I noticed looking through it, I'd say 98% of the names, and there are a lot of names there, a lot of names on the Leo Burdock's Hall of Fame, 98% are men. What does that say about anything? I don't know. Like, you can just see the women are notable because there's so few of them. I mentioned Sandra Bullock, Natasha Richardson's there. I see Bruce Springsteen's there. Not a woman, but yeah, just spotting him there now. Glenda Gilson, Eileen Reid. But the majority are men. I don't know what that says. Just we have a penchant for fish and chips, or I don't know. It's just there. But Leo Burdock's is part of the tapestry of Irish culture, as are the Saw Doctors. And tonight, on RT1, Ashtar on our own promises to unravel the captivating story behind the song N17. I was expecting the fast version. I'll just play a bit of this because it is, it's lovely. It's lovely, this version of it. So it's a new half-hour TV documentary about the song N17.
Well, I didn't see much future when I left the Christian Brothers school. So I waved it goodbye with a wistful smile, and I left the girls of June. And sometimes when I'm reminiscing.
So you'll hear the original tonight, RT1, 7 o'clock. That probably will get a mention as well. The Great Saw Doctors and the song N17. Now, 51551 rate RTE.ie. Washing your towel once a year would be fine if you just showered once a year. Aha! Very good. On vapes. I used a vape to give up the cigs and my breathing went to the dogs. Way worse than when I was smoking. Who knows what damage they're doing? I gave them up and I can breathe again. Who is littering them? Mostly younger people use them, and most of the young people I know wouldn't dare litter. Right. Surely if you're drying a washed self, you are drying an already clean area. So there's no real dirt as such on the towels. Just saying. I don't know if that's how it works. If you give yourself a good wash, your towel will not be dirty, says Marie. Mm. If people only shower once a month, that's only 12 uses a year, says Paul. Yeah, but you're only showering once a month. What about leather? How often are they, and if they are cleaned at all? Leathers? Do you clean leathers, as in leather trousers? We're back to Bono now. When I go for a walk and meet people, I always know if they were drinking, smoking, are wearing dirty clothes, wash their clothes with conditioner, wearing perfume, etc. People don't realise their smells travel, especially if they are running, says Kath. Yeah, I suppose if you're running, then your body is generating heat. And I'm sure if I thought about it long enough, I could tell you the science of this, but I don't have the time right now. But then the heat generates, it's like a fan blowing your smells out. Like when I'm running around in the morning, I can tell the people's smells. There's that woman, she smells like that. And then there's that man, he smells like that. And then, you know, because everyone has their smells. And you're running past them and they leave this cloud of smell. It's all mostly pleasant. Sometimes I think to myself, do people actually get up and go for a shower before they go for a run? Because some people smell so good. That's highly unlikely. The people who don't wash their bath towels must be a dirty shower. There you go. Laura De Barra, after 4 o'clock, she'll be giving us the lowdown, the rubdown, bath towels, all that sort of thing. 51551 ray at rte.ie. Good afternoon. Corinne Bailey Ray. Put your records on. 17 years old. That's 17 years old. Great. It won Grammy Award for Song of the Year, Grammy Award for Record of the Year. And coincidentally, I didn't know this, but Corinne Bailey-Ray has a new album out at the end of this week. So there. Now, who done it? Who did it? Who done it? Now, we're looking for two of you to come on our whodunit quiz after 4 o'clock. A great prize this week. It's a two-night stay for two adults at Foda Island Resort. Breakfast each morning and dinner in the new Foda restaurant on an evening of your choice. Experience the great facilities on site at Foda Island Resort, including many walking trails, an indoor swimming pool, the world-class Foda Island Spa, the exclusive Cove restaurant, or enjoy tea time, T-E-E time, on the golf course. And loads in the surrounding areas. There's Foda Wildlife Park, Foda House and Gardens. You can go into Cork City. You can go to Ballymaloe. You can go to Ballycotton. You can go to Middleton. Loads of things to do. FodaIsland.ie. FodaIsland.ie. You can visit there. Now, here's your qualifying question on this Tuesday afternoon. Which classic whodunit TV series is coming to the big screen? Is it Murder, She Wrote or Murder, She Spoke? Which classic whodunit TV series is coming to the big screen? Murder, She Wrote or Murder, She Spoke? 0818715925. That's 0818715925. Good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Molly Fury joins us in studio for a chat. A lot of people chatting about you over the last 24 hours, Molly Fury.
Yeah, good things, I hope.
Yeah. Molly wrote a piece for the Irish Times, and it's been retweeted by Roisin Ingle and Lisa McGee and others. And I woke up to a WhatsApp from one of my best friends. He said, you have to read this, it's brilliant. That was you.
That's good to hear.
So let's find out about you first.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just 24. Yeah. I just finished a master's. I was living in Amsterdam, which is where the piece came from. And I've just moved back to Dublin now. But yeah, trying to get writing. So I wrote this piece for the Irish Times.
So you're a master's in what?
In cultural studies, right. Which was quite broad and vague.
And you did a project on, it's not called a project, it's probably called a thesis.
Thesis, yeah. Sorry. Just to dress it up and make me feel good about myself. It's called a thesis. But yeah, it was about the Dairy Girls. So it was a great course because I was able to make that out of it, you know, and watch the Dairy Girls pretend I was studying all of that. So not a bad job.
And you did a thesis on Dairy Girls in a Dutch university.
Yes, I know.
Right.
Quite a convoluted route to it.
And do you have to pitch your thesis?
Yeah, you do. You do. You have to find a supervisor and everything to convince. So I was pleasantly surprised that they took it on. I don't know. I think they didn't really know what I was talking about. I was the mad Irish woman and I was convincing them that Dairy Girls was this great, best thing that's come out of Ireland, which I stand by. And they let me do it.
Give us the mini pitch.
Oh God, I'll try and sum down the 20,000 words. But no, I'd studied English and history as my undergrad, and I'd done a lot about Northern Ireland and the Troubles. And I just kind of saw what that show had done, you know, to that narrative, and the way it had usually been represented was through thrillers and crime, kind of paramilitary movies. And I just think kind of going down into the ordinary, into, you know, the everyday of that time was very, very powerful for that kind of
Have you read that book? Is it Trespassers?
Yes,
Louise Kennedy.
Exactly. Louise Kennedy.
That's a great book,
exactly.
Isn't it?
It's another example of what I'm talking about. I think there are a lot of incredible women from Northern Ireland kind of coming out and telling those new stories that need to be told that, you know,
It's against the backdrop, but it isn't the main story.
Yes, exactly. And that, you know, ordinary life goes on when those crises engulf a place and they're, you know, just as meaningful and just as stressful in their own way. So,
So you're in a university in Holland.
Yes.
And you're funding your MA. Is it an MA or
MA?
By working in a cafe.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, start at the top.
So there you are. You're in a cafe.
Yes.
And you occupy yourself by doing what?
Yes. By trying to spot the next Irish person coming in the door.
Right.
You know, I'm not someone who gets very homesick, but I do find the Irish very entertaining when we're abroad. We're pretty identifiable. And so I'd be stood behind the counter kind of twiddling my thumbs. And I started playing a game with myself to see if before the person opened their mouth, if I could guess that they were Irish. And I tended to get it right.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Keeps you entertained anyway.
Because I've been known to say on holidays, look at you with your big Irish head.
Big Irish head, exactly. Exactly. We all say it. We all know kind of what I'm talking about. And we've all done it. And you can usually spot them in a restaurant or in the cafe or at a movie, whatever you're doing. We kind of stand out.
And is it the pale skin? No, it's not just that. It's something else.
I think
else,
that was the thing. I think the stereotype is the pale skin or freckles or red hair. But, you know, we all look different. We're all, you know. our own people. So it was kind of, well, what more is going on there? What's the kind of spirit that we're bringing in that I can kind of sense, or any Irish person can sense, when the other Irish person walks in the room?
Yeah. So what is it, a demeanour, an aura?
Yeah. No, it's difficult to pin down. I'm not sure that I ever did, but it was, I said in the piece anyway that I wrote about it, it's kind of a delighted confusion or bewilderment about us. We're kind of happy to arrive somewhere in one piece all the time. And you kind of announce it then once you walk in the door.
Right. Yeah. Mm. Okay. So I'm going, delighted. Go on, say
we're
it again.
Delighted, but we're confused and kind of bewildered with ourselves. But there's a real friendliness to us. You know, we're very disarming. And so, especially in the Netherlands, people are a lot more direct, maybe a bit more reserved than you'd be used to growing up in Ireland.
Are they a bit more confident as well?
Definitely. Definitely more confident. The Irish kind of beat around, you know, everything and kind of dance around points, but the Dutch get straight to it and they're very direct, which can be pretty abrupt when you arrive. But so maybe the Irish stood out against that as well.
And what is it about the Centra bag?
Oh, right. Well, this is actually something I just noticed the couple of times I flew home. Every flight I was on, someone had a carry-on that was just a Centra bag or a Super Value bag or whatever. Right. And instead of just bringing a backpack or, you know, your 10kg suitcase, they'd have the Centra bag stuffed with their weekend packing, which always made me laugh.
Yeah. Now, obviously, when people open their mouth, it's very obvious that they're Irish.
Immediately.
And you too.
Yeah.
And I see you used, I say howya, but you say hiya.
Hiya, howya, whichever would do. And it was, that was how I'd kind of announce my own Irishness before they did, to let them know we are one, we are the same.
So there's this guy comes in, and you ask, because you're making the coffees and somebody else is taking the order.
Right, yeah.
Right. And you say,
My American colleague was on the till. I was doing the coffees or whatever, and he walks in. I kind of thought I heard an Irish accent, but I was otherwise preoccupied. And I just asked her, "Oh, was that one or two lattes that they ordered?" And he couldn't believe it. His eyes bulged open, and he goes, "Oh, you're Irish." And I go, "Yeah, I am." He goes, "Oh, well, F it so. It's two effing lattes for me." And I couldn't really quite figure out what the code switch there was to, "Oh, well, you're Irish. I can just curse at you." But it did feel like home. And it did feel weirdly appropriate. And my American colleague was very, very confused. She thought I'd been attacked or something.
You introduced me to this lovely word in your piece.
Oh, yes.
Lalochesia.
I don't even know how to say it, to be honest.
Well,
I
looked it up. The other people who do pronunciations online. Yes. So there is a lalochesia and then there's a lalochesia. I didn't hear a lalochesia.
Yeah, well, I was making it up as I went along. Right.
So what is it?
It means when you have the urge to curse and it just kind of bubbles out of you. Is the definition I was understanding.
I think there's a sort of a, there's a venting as well.
So
for example, if you're doing a bit of carpentry and you hit your thumb with a hammer.
It's kind of out of your control. It just bursts out of you. Yeah.
And they say that's actually good for you.
Probably. I'd like to say, I think the Irish have it figured out anyway.
You feel less pain.
Yeah.
But it is, and it's brilliantly observed because and a member of my family used to do this. Mm. Not only did they use expletives as punctuation.
Yes.
But oftentimes they'd interrupt a word.
Yes.
So they'd split a word in two
get the feeling across, you know. It's a whole emotional experience talking to an Irish person.
Yeah.
There's a lot of layers to it.
We don't like being the centre of attention.
No, we don't. And there was another customer who kind of announced her Irishness through that. This was another way I would identify. A couple of people did this now, where there's a bell on top of the door of the cafe. And if, you know, so it would announce your arrival. And any Irish person that had that, they'd nearly cringe at themselves. They were so embarrassed by this, like, very quick and fleeting spotlight. But then I'd immediately think, okay, they might be Irish.
Now, you see, it's not always obvious because I suspect that this lady was trying to maybe cover up her Irishness by wearing a beret.
Many of us are over there. You're trying to blend in. The Dutch are very sophisticated, very fashionable, chic people. Yeah. So you don't really, you're trying to blend in the whole time. But yeah, she rocked up in a beret in a very kind of European stylish outfit and like threw me off for a second. I thought, I don't know, she looked Irish, but she could be Dutch. Who knows? Maybe French. And she said, when I asked her, she said, well, sure, I could wouldn't be getting away with this beret in Westport now, could I?
So, yes,
she was making the most of the Dutch experience.
But isn't that interesting as well, that people travel abroad for different reasons, and sometimes they travel abroad to be more themselves.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And I said that in the piece where, you know, meeting Irish people abroad might be a different experience for everyone. Maybe not everyone's so happy about it or entertained by it. And, you know, a lot go to kind of find themselves or forge a different kind of life where they feel they can express themselves in a way they can't hear. And you definitely see that, you know, Irish people definitely coming out of their shells a bit more and all of that. But ultimately, I think you kind of look out for each other when you're there.
Do you think we're more Irish when we're abroad?
100%.
Yes.
But I think, as with, I'm sure, any nationality, once you go away, you're kind of removed from your normal context and what's ordinary to you. And so the things that you grew up never second guessing or questioning kind of start to stand out a little bit more and start to maybe seem a bit weird, especially when you have Dutch people looking at you like you've crossed eyes or something.
Yes.
And so you start thinking about what it is that makes you Irish, or, you know, what about you says Irish.
The things you've outlined so far, there's
a couple of them. Yeah. We're trying to shy away from attention, but we're also pretty friendly, pretty warm people, and kind of are always open to conversation or a bit of banter.
The other thing I find is that, you know, and you're from Dublin, so it's probably different in Dublin, but down the country, you know, you'd be in the local pub, and there might be somebody there, you recognise them, but you don't, you know, you've no reason to hang out with them. They're not in your class at school, they don't know any of your brothers and sisters. Then you're in Boston. You see them coming down the street.
New best friend. Like a long lost cousin or something. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it's kind of, you know, you're, even if you have tried to get away or you're trying to start a new life for yourself, you know, it's still a bit of home whenever you can meet an Irish person. Yeah. So, you know, if you're open to it, it can be a lovely little interaction, and you have the same set of cultural references. You might be following the same news stories going on at home, or, you know the particularities of being an Irish person abroad. Yeah. And so you can kind of share in that moment together.
Like, what do you think of the new guy in the Late Late Show?
Exactly. Yeah, because they'll understand, whereas all of my Dutch friends were looking at me like, what are you talking about?
So you're back home now.
So your MA is finished, is it? And I've just moved back this week. So hit the ground running anyway.
Yeah, you did.
It's a bit of excitement, but it's good to be back, you know. And if anything, being away kind of taught me, actually, maybe I do kind of like the Irish.
Who's at home?
It's my dad, two brothers as well. So they're laughing at me on this show now. They think it's hilarious. They're waiting for me to stumble up. So that's the real pressure here.
Are they younger or older?
A younger and an older.
Right. And were you in touch often when you're away?
Yeah. Well, that was the funny thing, especially with my dad. Sure, like, I'd moved out before I'd left anyway, and I'd nearly give him a ring or see him maybe every 2 months, 3 months if he was lucky. And he couldn't believe it. I was calling him every week. He was like, "What do you want?" Like, he wasn't even calling me, but it is a thing, you know, once you're away, you kind of value those little moments of home in the
and
way
it wasn't
do.
Just for Revolut, was it?
No, I swear. Well, maybe don't ask him, but I can say that it wasn't.
Can I point people towards it? Most read in the Irish Times website now for the last, I think, 36 hours.
Something
Molly
like that.
Fury. So I think we'll be hearing a lot more from you. Do you feel under pressure now?
Well, I am. Geez, how am I going to follow this up, you know?
Great to see you, Molly. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck. See you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Now, we're going to be speaking on the topic of suicide. So please be mindful of that, where you're listening and who you're listening with. Some of you may know our next guest for her flowery swim hats and colourful swimwear. But behind Claire woman June Curtin's Instagram account, there's a deep and meaningful reason as to how Snobby Sosta came to be. And June has come up from Spanish Point to be with us today. Hello, June.
Hello, Ray. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming up from the Clare coastline.
A very early start to the Banner County, Ray.
Was it this morning? Yeah. So you didn't get your swim in, did you not?
No swim this morning. I had to forego my swim to meet you. So there you go.
Sorry about that. Because does that mean you're going to be a bit tetchy?
Yeah.
Because I'm a creature of habit myself. And if I don't do what I'm supposed to do, sometimes I get a little bit, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I certainly know the days that I haven't been in the sea, I can feel it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So you have found solace and succour in the sea, and you couldn't swim, and it was long before people were slagging off dry robes and all that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
Before it became fashionable.
Yes.
And I think we were just talking before we went on air that I'm getting annoyed with people who are slagging off the faddishness of sea swimming. And yeah. I think it may be preventing people from getting into the sea because they think it's just a fad and it's just a gimmick and it's just
fashionable. The dry rope brigade.
Yes, all of that.
Yeah.
When you and I know, and a lot of people know, the benefits that it brings.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for me, I think... As I say, I only started swimming 4 years ago and I think I was grieving and grief needs a home. And for me, that home was the sea.
Yeah.
You know.
And you'd been grieving for 5-6 years
yes.
up to that.
Yeah.
And had you tried other things?
Lots of things and nothing seemed to work for me, I suppose.
What sort of things did you try?
Well, I had gone to the gym and I had done a little bit of mindfulness and yoga and I'd done lots of different things like that, but nothing worked.
And counselling.
And counselling, numerous times I tried counselling, but I suppose I found it very hard to talk.
Right.
That was the problem, you know.
Well, I suppose your story is difficult to tell and I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
So and thank you so much because that word aware is why you're here.
Yes.
It's the organisation Aware who deal with people who have depression and suffer with their mental health. And you lost your husband to suicide, John.
I did, yeah.
10 years ago.
10 years.
Yeah.
And some days it almost feels like it was yesterday.
Mm.
You know, it's been a long 10 years. My children were 5 and 9 at the time. Their dad left for work one morning and he never returned.
How did you meet or where did you meet John?
I met him in the Armada Hotel in Spanish Point. My family owned the Armada Hotel and I met him there. He was working in the hotel and love blossomed. And about 3 years later, we got married.
What kind of man was he?
He was a quiet man. He was from a farming background, so he was a really hard worker. And he was a good dad, great husband, a workaholic.
Mm.
But he suffered with his mental health.
Right.
And 10 years ago, I think there was a huge stigma attached to mental health. I think now we have come a long way, but back then it was not spoken about as much as it is now. And he found it very hard to talk about his feelings and his...
He spoke to you about it?
He spoke to me about it, but I was the only person who knew.
And when did he broach that with you?
Well, I suppose I had known for a long time that he was very... unwell with his mental health, but he was getting up every day and he was going out to work. And I had spoken to him and I had spoken to my GP about him maybe going to see his own doctor and talking to the GP and getting some help. But unfortunately, he just couldn't see any way out, I think.
Was it depression?
Depression, yeah.
Right. And I've read numerous books by people who've suffered depression and the description of it, been in a black hole and unable to climb out. And there's a lot of people say that if you know, the worst thing you can say to somebody like that is just get on with it or, you know.
Yes.
So you have everything. So you know, you're happily married, you have the two children, you know.
Yes.
No financial worries.
Yes.
And but that doesn't mean anything when you're depressed.
No, it doesn't, absolutely, because I think you're just, you're in a dark hole and you just can't seem to, I think maybe for John, my husband, he just couldn't seem to see any way out for himself. And sometimes, I suppose, when you're in such a dark place, you think that you're doing your loved ones a favour by not being around because maybe you feel like, I suppose, he felt like he was a burden on me. And I know how much he adored his children. And if he were in the right frame of mind, he certainly, whatever about me, would never have left his children.
It's very sad, isn't it? And just the what ifs and the...
All the unanswered questions.
Yes. Yeah. Did he leave a note?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No. Just went out to work one morning.
But you felt an unease that day.
I did because I knew, as I say, he hadn't been well and it seemed to be getting worse. And the night before he took his own life, I had spoken to him again about going to see his GP, Dr. Billy O'Connell in Milton Malbay. And he had said that he would. And I thought that maybe we had made a little bit of progress, that there was a slight breakthrough. And Yeah.
You see, for men in particular, firstly, we don't share a lot of our emotions with our friends. And it's still, although we do talk about it a lot more now than we did, it's seen as a sign of weakness. It's not very masculine. You know, they were the images that people would have had. And
I suppose
John coming from a farming background, they would have been stronger even again. So he was in his early 40s, was he?
He was 3 months short of his 40th birthday, actually.
How do you cope then, June? Like, the immediate aftermath of that. So you're a mother. So you're grieving for your friend, your husband. But you have two children now and you have to protect them.
Yeah, you have two small children. And I suppose they were my priority. And I'm only learning now that I suppose it's like the analogy of putting on your own oxygen mask first. And I didn't do that because I was so busy caring for my children. And a mother is as happy as her happiest child. There's that old saying. So I was so consumed by looking after my children and I suppose being a single mother and trying to care for them that I had completely neglected myself.
But how would you have known?
Yeah.
There's no textbook for this.
Absolutely. I had tried, as I say, counselling a few times. I had tried all the forms of exercise and just nothing seemed to work. And I was beginning to feel very down myself also because I didn't want to burden my family again because I suppose I'm surrounded. I live next door to my mom, who's a powerhouse, a phenomenal woman who built up a business from scratch. So she was a really hard worker and she was a great support to us. We live side by side, which was wonderful. And I didn't want to burden them because I suppose they had been through so much already. Mm. And I kept thinking I was okay and sure, I'll be grand tomorrow. But it was getting harder and harder, I suppose, too.
And everybody goes through grief differently.
Yes. And then my son, who's now 19, found it very hard to accept what happened to his dad. He was 9 at the time and very young. And he and his dad were best friends. They did absolutely everything together. So it was very hard for him. He finds it very hard to accept what happened.
Mm. Do you talk about John?
Yes, all the time. But unfortunately, my son isn't ready to talk yet.
And he will be.
He will in time because I know if I find it hard to talk and I'm an adult, I can totally understand, you know, his pain. It's immense.
And 9 around that age, like I saw with my children, it's a weird time. We've spoken about this with Coleman Nocter as well, who's a child and adolescent psychotherapist. It's a time when you can become preoccupied with death.
Yes.
And it's when you realise that the world isn't permanent and that people around you will die and you might die as well. So it's not that there's any good time to lose your dad to suicide, but So he's dealing with, he surfs a lot.
He's a big wave surfer.
He's found the sea.
He has found the sea the healing powers of the sea.
People slag me, I played a bit of rugby, but I did a bit of surfing for 2 weeks. But what I found, it's mindful. It is mindful surfing because you're completely at the mercy of Mother Nature. You have to completely concentrate on what's happening around you. You don't have any time to be thinking about anything else.
Absolutely.
You have to be in the moment.
Yeah, and I suppose he did a month in Hawaii in January surfing.
Wow.
He did 5 weeks in Indonesia in June and he's hoping to go back again at the end of September.
Wow.
So
I did 2 weeks in Banna Beach. But isn't that brilliant though? That's brilliant. So he's really found something.
But you know,
he's found a tribe.
He has absolutely. And you know, the surfing community are great. They're very laid back.
Yes. Because you have to wait, don't you? You can't. That's the thing. You see, you can't say, wave, come on.
Yes.
And you can't say, we'll have waves at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
So he's very lucky, I suppose. He is very lucky that he has found something.
Mm.
And That was the C for
and
him.
And your daughter
as well.
Is 15 then?
She's 15. Yeah. She's still in school. She's in transition year.
Right.
And a great girl.
Great
girl.
So you tried all of those things. And then one day, despite the fact, because I've been in your family's hotel.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a picture on my phone looking out at the sea.
You're
like a stone's throw.
Yes.
You're a stone's throw, aren't you, from the sea?
Yeah, absolutely. And I never learned, I suppose.
Why is that?
As a child growing up in Spanish Point, we were brought up in a family business. So during the busy summer months July and August, we were working and we never got to the beach.
Right.
And
so here we are, you were in your mid-40s and you couldn't swim.
Yeah. And I decided out of the blue one day that I'd go down to the beach for a swim the following morning, and they were all laughing at me and they said, sure, you can't swim, June, where are you going? Anyway, I decided that I would go down the following morning at 9 o'clock, and I got into the sea, and I still remember it vividly. It's almost like you leave your troubles on the shoreline, and for those 5 or 10 minutes, all you can think about, well, for me, all I could think about was surviving the waves coming at me at that very moment. And I just came out of the water a different person.
Was it immediately transformational?
Totally.
Was it?
Yeah. And I suppose I knew there and then that if I wanted to do it every day, but that if I wouldn't probably commit to going every day on my own, if I didn't maybe put it out to others, that I was doing it.
Right.
So at that stage, I didn't even have an Instagram page. I just had my own personal Facebook, and I put a post on Facebook that night after my very first swim saying I'm going for
it. It wasn't a swim. Now, let's be speaking. It was a dip. You got in the water.
I got in the water. And anyway, I put a post going to bed that night saying that I was going for a swim the following morning. At that time, it was 9 o'clock. If anybody wanted to join me. And there was a local man in Spanish Point, Gerard, who happened to see my post, and he said to his wife, Mary, he said, oh, June, Burke is going for a swim in the morning. Would you not like to join her?
Yeah.
So Mary joined me on day two, and she's still with me 4 years later. And on that second day, I said to her, I'll see you tomorrow, Mary. And she said to me, day by day, June.
Right.
And that's the same line every day.
And that's grieving, isn't it? It's day by day grieving as well, isn't it?
It's day by day. Yeah. But
what,
it is.
What does it do for you, June?
I think I'm able to take on anything that comes at me at any given day once I've had those 5 or 10 minutes in the morning. And I suppose it's not even the sea, it's the community that I have built around me. I set up an Instagram page.
Snavi Sosta.
At Snavi Sosta, yes.
Which, what's the translation?
Happy Swimmers.
Happy Swimmers, right, okay.
To promote, I suppose, the benefit of sea swimming and, more importantly, mental health awareness. And I have probably 2 years now, and I have amassed a following of about 30,000,
right.
Maybe a few more after this now, Ray.
and you have the swim hats with the flowers on it.
I
you look like something from a 1950s synchronized swimming opening scene in a musical. That's all, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, yes, yes. I wear.
Is that the reference?
And you know, I'm easily, I suppose, identifiable. Then, if somebody comes, they come now.
You're like a beacon.
People travel from the four corners of Ireland to join me for a swim. And Sunday probably would be our biggest day. And we have a country music disco on the beach every Sunday morning of the year, throughout the year. You know, December, January,
code?
February. And you're your swimwear.
Yeah, that's it. Right.
So you can come in your budgie smugglers, Ray. We'd be delighted to see you.
That'd be difficult because we don't have any. Do you know in some campsites in France, you have to wear those?
Right, okay.
Because they reckon that the shorts, which I would wear, and most men would wear, Irish men, that they're unhygienic. That's what they say. Anyway,
oh,
but
really?
There you go. Yeah.
Okay.
So you have a country music disco
every
on the beach
Sunday morning.
In Spanish Point. When you say country, is that Johnny Cash or is it?
No, it's Daniel O'Donnell.
Right.
Declan Nerney.
Okay.
All the Irish country music stars, and a mix, of course, of others as well.
Your large Bluetooth speaker and your playlist.
We have our big speaker, we have our playlist, and we do breakfast on the beach for everybody afterwards. Nobody leaves without a big sausage in the morning.
Right.
A breakfast roll for everybody.
It sounds brilliant. And Aware then rang you. And they've been working in mental health and particularly depression, that area, for a long time now.
Yeah.
And they have their big splash on the 23rd.
Which the 23rd is of September. Yeah.
Sunday week.
Yes. Isn't
it? Sunday week. And they're sort of, in a way, hopping on the sea swimming bandwagon, yep, which is great. And they're encouraging people to do it. And you can go to aware.ie and you get your Aware swim cap.
You do, €23 to register.
€23 to register. And then you do it.
Aware.ie. And I suppose it's getting people talking about their mental health and supporting Aware and raising much needed funds for people impacted by depression,
yes,
and bipolar disorder. And the sea swimming community are great. It's a great way of bringing people together and getting people talking about their mental health.
I was looking at it and I was thinking, what's the significance of €23? And of course, it's 2023.
Yes, duh. Yes, yeah.
Yes.
So I will be swimming in Killiney, actually,
right,
on the 23rd.
And
so
will there be a disco?
There'll be a country music, yeah, disco. And
can I bring my own playlist? If I can bring my own playlist.
And I'll be waiting patiently for Ray Darcy and his budgie smugglers.
It's odd because, when we're holidays down the country, we swim a lot. We don't swim in Dublin, but Jenny and I have decided we're going to try and make an effort this autumn winter.
So I'll see you on the 23rd.
Well, I'll say to Jenny and I'll get her. Well, I don't have to get her approval, but
that'd be a nice thing to do.
No, I think I'll take you. I don't know what's in the diary, but there you go.
So we're challenging everybody to sign up on the 23rd. And of course, not everybody can get to a beach.
Yes.
And if you can't, an ice bath, a freezing cold shower.
Yes.
Get into a lake, get into a river. Just don't get in there on your own, I suppose.
Yes, of course.
Get in with somebody.
Be safe. And it's about solidarity as well.
It's about solidarity, absolutely.
Awareness of mental health and fundraising, of course. All those things. Yeah. Hello to my beautiful Instagram friend, June, an amazing, kind lady who has brought joy, compassion and hope to so many. She lights candles weekly for everyone. Thank you, June. We love you. There you go. And
Thanks you very much.
Thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for making the trip.
Thank you for having me.
And keep getting in. Oh, you can swim now. That's the big,
yes,
the big news.
Yes,
you can swim.
Yes,
you can swim.
Yes.
Yes.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Girl Margaret Maura Breed, thank you very much. 51551RayRTE.ie. On welly throwing, Alfie in Athenry says, you mentioned you were going to a Wellington throwing competition, or even welly throwing competition this week. Well, I suggest you go to Bonnyconlon, County Mayo, sometime in the near future. You will find national and world champions. They made their mark many times at the Bally or even Bonnyconlon show. You will certainly enjoy it and you will want to come back. And on your way just 4 miles, the Tubbercurry side of Bonny, you will pass the beautiful Loch Tolt in County Sligo. You'll certainly go back there as well, says Alfie in Athenry. Thanks for all of that, Alfie. And on cursing, we were talking to Molly Fury about it. Peg Sayers said that it is a balm for the heart to let a good curse out. That's from Anne. If Peg Sayers says it, it must be true. I was a medical rep in 1967 and a doctor I was speaking with described something as unbe-effin-leavable. Censored for radio. Thanks. That's another Ray. And on being yourself abroad, somebody says, I wore a woolly Rasta hat for months in Jamaica and no one batted an eye. I arrived into Dublin and the first comment was, who do you think you are, Bob Marley? You muppet. You see, you can be yourself when you're abroad. Not so easy when you're at home. Okay, we've two quizzers standing by for our whodunit quiz. And one of them will win the prize, which is a two-night stay for two adults at Photo Island Resort with breakfast each morning and dinner in the new Photo restaurant on an evening of your choice. And of course, loads of things to do down there. There's walking trails, swimming pools, Photo Island Spa. And then around the place, you have Photo Wildlife Park, Photo House and Gardens, the world-class English Market in Cork City. Of course, Cork City, Ballymaloe, Ballycotton, Middleton, all there at your doorstep. PhotoIsland.ie. PhotoIsland.ie. It's a great prize. Hello, Jackie O'Brien.
Hello, Ray Darcy. How are you doing?
I'm good. You're doing bits and pieces.
Bits and pieces, yeah. What? The way my day goes when I'm on a night shift.
Yeah, I see that. You're starting a shift at 10 o'clock tonight.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And when do you finish?
Our week starts on Sunday night and we finish on Friday morning at 6.
Okay, so 6, so it's 10 to 6.
In the morning.
Do you have a week on, week off, or what way does it work?
Next week it'll be 2 to 10 in the evening and then the week after it'll be 6 in the morning till 2 in the daytime.
Oh God, do you get used to it?
No, you never get used
no,
to it.
No, no, you don't. it's in a contact lens factory.
That's right, yeah, here in the city.
Right. They're very finickety things, aren't they?
If they're used right, yeah, they're great. You know, because they just take away the hassle of glasses, you know.
Yes,
they're really
yeah.
good.
What fascinates me is, and I was watching the rugby over the weekend, and one of the Irish guys, I think it was your man McCarthy, I'm not sure, I think it was the new guy, second row forward. Mm-hmm. He lost a lens during the match, and he was there, and the guy came out, and he had his little mirror, and he was able to put it back on out in the pitch.
Pop it in, yeah.
Yeah, pop it in.
Yeah, just pop it in, yeah, yeah, no bother. Yeah,
yeah, practice makes perfect. Do you wear contacts yourself?
I don't at the moment. I did for a long time. I did wear them.
Right.
But I've just got comfortable with the glasses again, my face furniture.
Yeah, one of the team here has just turned their back on the contact lenses and they're wearing glasses now.
Mm-hmm.
So just so you know. I suppose you go through phases, do you?
You do, I think, yeah.
Are you going to the ploughing next week?
No, not this year. Now, I have been before. Marvellous day, it was a great day.
Yeah, yeah. Biggest outdoor event in Europe, just in case you didn't know. We're going to be there in the Roadcaster, yeah. You're up against Val Keane. Is it Keane?
That's right. Hi, Ray. How are you?
Not too bad. You're in Cork. Sorry, Jackie, you're in Waterford.
I
just didn't establish that. You're in Waterford, Val. You're in Cork. Whereabouts in Cork are you, Val?
In Mallow at the moment, working in Mallow.
Right. What are you doing there?
I am a pharmacist. I work in Mulcahy's Life Pharmacy in Mallow.
Okay. And when are you finished?
Finished at 7:30 now tonight, so on the late shift tonight.
Right. And what's the plan then for the rest of the evening?
Not much now, really. Take it handy. Have a bite to eat, I suppose, and that's about it. Back into work then again in the morning.
Yeah. Are you going to the ploughing?
I'm not, no. Unfortunately not. Not this year, anyway.
No. I see you do a bit of running.
I do, like yourself, yeah.
Are you doing any, heading towards any big event or...?
No, nothing. Nothing at the moment. No, I generally just do kind of 5K or that way after work. But I've done a half marathon in the past, and do a few 10Ks and that kind of stuff. But nothing planned now for the next while.
Tipping over.
Exactly. Yeah. Keeping busy.
Whereabouts in Waterford are you, Jackie? Sorry, I didn't establish.
Oh, I'm in the city in the Cork Road.
Great. And Mallow is where you work, but where do you live, Val? Did you say?
Just kind of, I'm from Kentork, about 20 minutes away.
Oh, yeah.
Not too far away.
Yeah, I know where Kentork is, yeah. Okay, right. So it's three questions each, Jackie and Val. I'll give you the category, and then I'll ask if you want a clue. If you go for a clue and get it right, you get a point. If you go without a clue and get it right, you get 2 points, because it's more difficult, and whoever has the most points is the winner. And if it's a draw on points, we go to a tiebreak question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Best of luck, Val.
Jackie.
Best of luck.
Music. No more than that. That's all I have here. Music is the category. Do you want a clue or not?
No clue.
No clue. For two, who is this?
Hello, I lost you there, Ray.
Say again.
I lost you there for a second, sorry.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, sorry.
Here, I'll tell you
can
what.
Can you hear that again?
Yeah, you can, yeah. Now, I'll give you a bit of it again. Are you ready? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect now, yeah.
Okay, 2 points for this. I'll give you 10 seconds of it. Here goes.
We'll give it a shot. Oh, halfway there. Oh, give me all my prayers. Take my hand.
Now, who's that?
I know the song and I can't think of it.
Yeah. No.
No, home
country. No, it's Bon Jovi.
Yes.
Actually, they got a mention yesterday because Jake Bon Jovi is going out with Millie Bobby Brown. That's Bon Jovi's son. There you go. Anyway, don't panic yet, Jackie. Val, music for you too. What do you want to do? Do you want to go for a clue or not?
No, I won't.
No clue. For two, who is this? Who's that?
It's Aerosmith.
It is. I don't want to miss a thing. 2 points for you. Good start. Now, Jackie, under a little bit of pressure, the second category.
Small bit.
UK TV presenters. UK TV presenters.
We live dangerous. No clue.
No clue. Okay. For two, Can you name this UK TV presenter?
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, children. Welcome to the Generation Game. Nice to see you, to see you. Nice. Oh, yes. Yes, 54 minutes of fun and frolics. And that's difficult to say if you haven't had a drink. Oh, we have got a funny party upstairs. Could be a strange night. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the part of the show where we always meet the hostess for the series.
Who's that?
Oh, no. No. I said Bruce Forsyth to begin with, but no, it's not him.
Do you want to guess? Take a guess. Do you want to guess that?
No, it won't come to me. What it is.
What do we do there? You said the correct answer, so I can take it, they're saying to me. You said the correct
Bruce
answer.
Bruce Forsyth.
Yeah. You see, if you would have said that and it was wrong, I would have had to take it. So if you said it and it's right, I have to take it as well. So there you go. It's Bruce Forsyth. 2 points. Well done.
I thought you were starting off, but it didn't sound like towards the end.
Yeah, well, that was in the Generation Game. Died in 2017. Of course, he did. Bruce, yes. He did Strictly as well. Okay, UK TV presenters, Val. What do you want to do?
We'll go No Clue again.
No Clue for two. Who is this?
Yeah. Mind you, the very first time we did the show, you never saw it. In 1985, when I presented the pilot edition of Blind Date, it was never intended to be seen by the viewers at home. At least, not until now.
Who's that?
Cilla Black.
It is Cilla Black, yes, talking about Blind Date. Saur, S-A-W-R, that's what she's... Anyway, 2 points for you. You're on four, Val. Jackie, you're on two. So, Oscar-winning pop stars is the category. You sort of have to go without a clue, don't you?
Yes,
you do. Yes, okay. Right, good luck with this. This will keep you in the quiz if you get it right. So for 2 points, can you name this Oscar-winning pop star?
Thank you so much. Thank you. This is amazing. I'd just like to thank Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson at Eon Productions, Sony Pictures, MGM, Paul Etworth for, oh, God. believing in me all the time. And my man, I love you, baby. Paul Etworth.
Who's that?
Adele,
it is, yes. Yes, you need more confidence in yourself, Jackie. That is Adele, yes.
It's so easy when you're listening to the radio. It's not so easy when you're here.
Yeah, but it's always worth a guess.
And
I'm not going to say always the first thing that comes into your head is right, because it's not, but it's always worth a punt anyway. Okay, so you're on four. You can't do any more, Jackie. That's a good score. Val, you're on four too, but you have this final question in hand. What do you want to do? It's Oscar-winning pop stars. Do you want to take a clue or not?
Sure, I might as well take a clue this
You thing. Might as well, yes. That would be the intelligent thing to do. Okay, here's your clue. She had hits with Poker Face and Just Dance. So, for 1 point and the quiz today, can you name this Oscar-winning pop star?
All I have to say is that this is hard work. I've worked hard for a long time, and it's not about winning. But what it's about is not giving up. If you have a dream, fight for it. And it's not about how many times you get rejected. It's about how many times you stand up and are brave and you keep on going. Thank you.
Who's that?
Lady Gaga.
It is Lady Gaga. You go, girl. Yeah, and she...
Well done, Bob.
Yeah. Shallow, A Star Is Born. She won an Oscar for that. And of course, Adele won for Skyfall. Well done, Val. Jackie.
Thanks a million.
Jackie, lovely talking to you. Stay where you are, Val. Lovely talking to you, Jackie. We're going to send you out a radar show. Keep cup. Yeah, you're
best
coming
well
in
done,
out there.
Val.
Okay, mind yourself.
Thank
See you, Jackie.
Jackie.
Bye now. Bye.
Take
That's
care,
Jackie
bye.
There.
Thank you.
Val, well done.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for
the You're making it. The huge trip out to Fort Island.
I know, a long way away, but yeah, well, we'd be delighted to make that trip.
Well, in fairness, Cork's a big county and you're up there, the northwest side.
It's about an hour, 20 minutes. So
you can go to fortisland.ie to see what's in store for you. Congratulations, Val. Well done. Great talking
Thanks,
to
brilliant.
You.
Bye Thanks
now.
Very
bye,
much.
Bye, 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 bye. And just, we were talking to June there about the big splash for Aware. It's Saturday, the 23rd of September. Saturday, 23rd of September. And you can register now at aware.ie. And it's any sort of a splash, ice baths, cold shower. If you're by a beach, great. If you're by a lake or whatever. And it's aware.ie.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Chill by Mark Harper. I meant to mention that book when we were talking to June about sea swimming. We talked to him earlier in the year. He's a medical doctor. He's been swimming in the sea for a long time, and he wrote a book about the research that's been done about the beneficial effects of being in cold water. And Chill is the name of it. Mark Harper is the man. And it's a great read. It's a great read if you're in any doubt about the beneficial effects of sea swimming. Now, 20 years ago this year, no, sorry to go, next month, sorry, 20 years ago next month, Paddy Casey released his album Living. And he's coming into us tomorrow to play a few tracks and have a chat about the last 20 years and the effect it had on his life. But just to whet your appetite. The big single, the big song from Living. 20 years old, 20 years old, 20 years old.
Well, anyone can lose it all.
Paddy Casey, Saints and Sinners, and he'll be live with us tomorrow on the show between 3 and 4:30. Now, when you get out of the shower this morning, did you reach for your lovely, warm, dry, fluffy towel? Ooh, lovely. Or was it slightly cold, limp, damp, a little bit smelly? Well, the reason we're asking is that we spotted a survey done in the UK which found that 1 in 10, that'd be 6.5 million people in the UK, wash their towels only twice a year. And if you're repulsed by that, you'll be even more repulsed to hear that 1.5 million only wash their towels, their bath towels, once a year. So immediately we picked up the phone to our gaff goddess, Laura De Barra. What's going on here?
I am living for how into this you are. I knew I'd get you to the dark side.
Now, here, now, look, we mentioned this at the beginning of the show, Laura, and people did point out that if you only have a shower once a month, well, then you're only using it 12 times, which is a fair point. Which is a fair point. So, do you believe these stats?
If you've seen some of the people I've dated, you'd believe it too.
I think you wouldn't have to see them. You'd smell them before you'd see them.
Love is blind.
Nostrils aren't, though. That's the thing. Go on.
So I think the main thing here, because we're all just like gooped and gagged hearing this news, is people's lack of awareness of what actually goes on after you use a towel. So the main thing to keep it clean, it's not just in the washing, it's also in, you have to leave it dry out thoroughly after each wash because of the type of fabric that it is. It's a twisted yarn that's holding bacteria and moisture. Some bacteria is grand and some is not one you want to fester. So you want to make sure you're washing your towels every week. Your bath mat would be the same. Like, a bath mat is going to harbour the same bacteria, if not worse, because it's not usually drying out as much. And then your dressing gown is another one. She should be done weekly too.
Now, what they were saying earlier on, when I mentioned this, was that you have a shower. You are clean. Therefore, yes, if you dry yourself with a clean towel, everything is clean.
You still have body oils, and when you're using any type of product at all, it's going to be on your body, like a shower gel or shampoo or anything like that. So it's not so much about it being dirty, it's more about it being body oils and bacteria. And no matter how much you leave that towel dry out in between showers, it still needs to be cleaned.
Yeah, I would love some scientists to get their hands on those towels that haven't been washed for a year and bring them into a lab. And do a study of all the little yolks that are in there.
Those towels could probably walk themselves to the lab after a year.
They're having a full-on Glastonbury there, in there. Oh, yeah, hands in the air, all the little lads going, yeah. So you say once a week. So that could be 7 showers.
Yeah, but that, like you say, it is clean, a clean body, right, even though it's got the oils and the products. You don't need to overwash your towels because you're losing fibres on the towels anyway each time, as long as they're drying okay in between washes. I personally wouldn't advise storing your towel in the room that everyone in your house goes into the bathroom in. There's the plume that I wrote about in one of my books, every time you flush the toilet. And unless you know that everybody's putting down the lid, I wouldn't be putting my towel in there.
Remind people about the plume. You've horrified members of the team. They weren't aware of the plume until you informed them.
Oh my God, the plume sounds like something really camp and fantastic, and it's not at all. Basically, how a toilet works is like the force of that water going down actually causes air to shoot up, and that's all bacteria that comes out of you when you go to the bathroom, and it can spread it around the room. So that's why you need to keep a lot of things away from the toilet. Or the simple solution is use the lid, and what it's designed for is to be down when you flush.
Right. So never flush with the lid up.
Yeah, never.
Right, okay. So you told us before about washing, I think you did anyway, about washing towels, that you shouldn't use fabric softener.
Yeah, fabric softener, even though every single advert out there will have a baby bouncing on a towel for fabric softener, you're not supposed to use it on children's clothes or on toweling, mainly because it's usually an animal fat that's in it. It's like a waxy product, and that stays on the fibres, which prevents the towel doing what it needs to do, which is taking the moisture off your body. But also, it traps bacteria in it. So as the towel is used throughout the week, it gains more and more bacteria, then you're putting a waxy layer over that bacteria. It's not washing off properly. So it's not working as it should, but it's also not as clean as it could be.
Right. And washing your towel after every shower, that's not good for the environment.
Listen, if it makes people happy, go for it.
Right.
No one can be 100% good for the environment. And that is why a lot of people shy away from making a few small choices that can be better, because they feel like they don't want to go all in. If you're great in other aspects of your life and you want to wash your towel after every shower, that is totally up to you.
Knock yourself out.
I would say, the world is hard enough as it is. Wash your shower daily if you want to. Wash your towel daily. But every Saturday, I would be doing a wash with your towels, face cloths, your makeup, cleansing pads, all of those bits.
What we'll get to the makeup things in a moment if we have time. Tea towels.
So tea towels, you should always have two different tea towels. One is for like hands and bits like that. And then the other one would be for wiping down surfaces that food are touching.
But is that not a dishcloth? Is that not a dishcloth?
Yeah, dishcloth and tea towels, whatever. Like not the dishcloth that's in the sink. Like when you're cooking, you'll have what I call a chef's towel. And that'll be one for like surfaces. There's a lot of this in decor galore because I'm actually a little bit obsessed with all these different towels in the house.
Yes.
And then a lot of times people hang the tea towel off the oven and then they use it to dry dishes, wipe down the counter if something spills, and dry their hands.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
So you divvy out what each one does. So how many do you have in total then? Do you have two tea towels and a dishcloth, or maybe two dishcloths, one for wiping up the surface and then one in the sink, and then you have two tea towels, one for your hands and then one for wiping the surface. Is that it?
Yeah, two tea towels. And I bought a batch from a chef supplier, and there's green stripes on one, blue stripes on the other, so it's easy to figure them out.
Colour-coded.
Yeah, and they're stunning, and they're 100% cotton, easy to wash, and you can tell when you need to wash them, you know. And then if they're getting manky, you can then just wash them with a bit of vinegar or bicarbonate, it'll brighten them up.
One of the most, well, I wouldn't say most, but one an embarrassing memory I have, and I'm actually going red here when I think about it, but there was a time when I lived on my own. And we subjected all our dishcloths to scientific scrutiny. We were on the radio and it was a slow week. So, and to this day, I still remember, and I'm actually feeling myself going red here, but mine came up, you know, mine was the least clean.
It
hasn't happened.
Well, at least you know it's normal. Like, that's how kitchens are and how humans are. You probably didn't wash it enough. That's it.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Didn't, yeah.
There's no shame in things getting dirty and stuff. It just means you're living.
Yeah, but and I think the smell test probably is a good one, isn't it? Because that's how our ancestors decided, right from food going off to other stuff. Like, if it doesn't smell right, it's probably not right and you need to do something about it.
Yeah, but then something like vinegar, people say, smells terrible, and she's wonderful.
She is wonderful. Oh, look, I've just said it. She's wonderful. Can't believe it.
You're fully on the dark side now.
completely on the dark side. Look, just a quickie before you go. Jeans, because that was in the news recently as well. It's a perennial, I know, but what's your take on it? How often do you wash jeans?
I think with jeans, if you've got 100% like a proper denim, you don't want to wash it that often. It's different if you have more faux jeans. I would make sure after you wear jeans, you turn them inside out just to leave them air, like hang them off the outside of your wardrobe door. You can always steam them to get odours out.
Right.
And I would make sure that like when you're wearing, if you want jeans to last a long time, when you're wearing them, tuck like a cotton t-shirt into the waistband to absorb any sweat. I would wash them as minimal as possible. I'd spot clean them. Make sure on a sunny day you're hanging them out on the line and stuff, but you don't need to keep washing them. Okay. If you find you get saggy knees and a saggy bum, that's the elastane going in the jeans that you're wearing,
you're
and
done.
That's from overwashing.
And our time is done as well. They're done. We're done. Laura De Barra, thank you so much.
Thanks,
you're wonderful.
Bye.
See you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Cormac's on Drive Time. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.